You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 1st of August 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Thailand. Habari Yebo, hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove.
To continue our special celebration of the Olympics, tonight we're live at Africa Village in the green, leafy enclaves of Kensington Gardens in West London.
Coming up in the next 60 minutes, we'll be talking to Olympic officials and journalists, musicians and artists from all across Africa.
We'll be speaking to the Secretary General of Botswana's Olympic Committee.
There'll also be an Ethiopian government official, a Nigerian journalist and a Tunisian potter.
And we'll also play some choice African tunes.
All that to come here on a special Midori House live from Africa Village here in Kensington Gardens.
But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Monocle 24 News. Susan Gosher, a spokeswoman for the United Nations Supervision Mission in Syria, has said that opposition forces in Aleppo are now in possession of heavy weapons.
We also now have confirmation that the opposition is in possession of heavy weapons, including tanks. The situation that concerns us the most is the situation of civilians. There are some civilians who are trapped in the crossfire. There are others who are seeking refuge and shelter in schools and hospitals and public buildings in safer neighbourhoods.
Rebels battling for control of Syria's commercial capital have said today that they are closing in on Aleppo city centre. A Florida judge has today rejected a motion asking him to step down from the murder trial of George Zimmerman, the neighbourhood watch captain who killed unarmed black teenager Trayvon Martin, ruling the defence request was legally insufficient. Zimmerman's lawyer, Mark Amara, in a motion filed on the 13th of July asking the judge to step down, accused Judge Kenneth Lester of bias, citing what he called gratuitous and disparaging remarks Lester made in a 5th of July ruling raising Zimmerman's bond from $150,000 to $1 million. Over half of India's 1.2 billion population is finding life returning to normal after one of the world's worst blackouts when grids collapsed for the second time in 2 days. Sunil Kanoria, the deputy chairman of the Associated Chambers of Commerce and Industry of India, said a lack of competition in the coal industry didn't help.
The problem is caused because the coal sector continues to be a monopoly of the government, and I feel that there is a need for competition to be created in coal so that ultimately there is a drive towards improved productivity and improved production.
The Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko has sacked his air defence chief and head of the border guards for failing to stop a Swedish plane drop hundreds of teddy bears over the hardline state in a pro-democracy stunt. The plane, chartered by a Swedish public relations firm, crossed into Belarusian airspace from Lithuania on the 4th of July and dropped about 800 of the toy bears near the village of Inverness. Sports news now, and eight women badminton players have been disqualified from the women's doubles at the London Olympics for not trying their hardest to win. The women from China, Indonesia and South Korea had been charged with deliberately losing points to secure an easier draw through the Olympic tournament. Badminton fans William Singleton and Kristen Kaspersen said it was ruining the Olympic spirit.
It's not just to do with the winning, it's the taking part and what the community gets out of it. Not just two athletes wanting to get gold and China wanting all the glory. It's a bit selfish, it's ruining the Olympic spirit.
Well, I think it's a shame that they do the sport like that, they don't play like they should play, and it's a shame for the sport, and in my eyes they should be stopped or be thrown out.
Meanwhile, the host country has won two gold medals today. Team Great Britain's Helen Glover and Heather Stanning stormed to victory in the women's Olympic rowing pair, and Bradley Wiggins has won gold in a time trial this afternoon. China are leading the medals table with 15 gold medals. The USA are in second place with 10 gold medals. France are in third place with 5 gold medals. And Britain are in 10th place with 2 golds, 2 silver and 4 bronze medals. And finally, civil partnerships for same-sex couples here in Britain have proved far more popular than originally originally thought, with more than 50,000 tying the knot. However, the news comes at a price, as gay divorces are also rising as couples approach the so-called seven-year itch. The Prime Minister, David Cameron, has pledged to allow same-sex marriages by the year 2015. And those are the stories at the top of the hour here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wheatley, and welcome back to Africa Village, where I'm sad to report it's slightly cloudy now, isn't it, Sophie?
When we arrived, it was gloriously sunny. It almost felt like Africa, especially as people are sipping Tusker beers in this wonderful cafe and dancing to amazing music in each pavilion. And now the clouds have gathered.
They have, but don't worry, it's all going to be good. Just so you can picture where we are, we're on a balcony overlooking the village, which is a series of white marquees stretching all the way back through the park towards a statue that I really should know.
It's the Albert Memorial.
Oh, the
Steve.
Albert Memorial. Okay,
built
I knew that.
It's the largest sort of memorial to love in London. It's beautiful. It's very Victorian.
It is.
It's kind of incongruous with Africa Village.
Really. It is, but it does fit in quite well, though, in a weird sort of
way.
It's
rather nice to look at, and it's a great atmosphere here today.
It really is. So all afternoon we've been down, we've been going to all the different stalls. There's the Gabonese have a tent here, the Ethiopians, the Tunisians. We're going to be bringing a few of the people running those little areas up here to our balcony a little bit later, aren't we, Sophie?
We are, and it's we're trying to bring the sort of party into the studio up here on this balcony. We've got a great view, but the action's downstairs, and there's so much craft going on. And there's also in Nigeria stand, there's something called the Cash Grab Challenge, which I'm not quite sure what that is, but it looks like it's very competitive and popular.
And hopefully legal. There's also one other bit of excitement which might interrupt us at some stage. There are some Egyptian dancers that I've been promised are going to be performing at one stage. It might be they're performing right underneath us. We'll see whether that happens, but hopefully it'll all be good. We've got lots coming up. We will be bringing you various journalists, various Olympic officials right after this. You're listening to a very special Midori House here on Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olimpiski teigrissa pu Monocle 24.
Lontosta maailmalle Monocle 24.
الألعاب الأولمبية تأتي إلى المونوكول 24.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monaco 24.
Shooting Olympique in Monaco 24.
The Olympics on Monaco 24.
And you're listening to a very special edition of Midori House, broadcasting live from Africa Village. One of the greatest things about the Olympics is not the battle at the top between the superpowers, but the moments when athletes from less heralded countries win high-profile races and grab their moment in the sun. The moment, for instance, when the Botswanan national anthem rings out from the Olympic stadium, beamed out across the world.
Our first guest hopes precisely that will happen next week when two Botswanan athletes compete in the 400 and 800 metres. Tuelo Sarufo is the chief executive of the Botswanan National Olympic Committee, and he joins us now here at Africa Village. Welcome to Midori House.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us, you've got two really strong prospects on the Botswanan team. Can you give us an insight into who these guys are?
Okay, the one is a lady, and she competes in 400 meters. She's the reigning world champion in that event. She won the Diamond League last year, as well as the Athletics World Championships in 2011. And she's currently leading the 2012 Diamond League. So she's our greatest prospect in terms of medals. And we've got an 18-year-old youngster who recently won the World Junior Championships in Barcelona with a very good time, actually a few weeks before then. He ran a 1:43.11, which makes him the second fastest man in the world in 2012. So those are two main prospects for medals at the London 2012 Olympic Games.
How important is athletics, track and field, back in Botswana? I mean, how does it rank in terms of the sports that fans really cherish, that they really sort of put their support behind?
Well, perhaps like in a lot of countries, soccer tends to be, you know, the most popular sport in the country. But besides soccer, you know, athletics is actually making a lot of grounds towards catching soccer as our main sport. If I were to give you a little background of our participation or competition at the Olympic Games, we first appeared in Moscow in 1980. And have appeared at each edition of the game since then. So now in London, this is our 9th appearance. And in all our 8 previous attempts, we've always gone back home empty-handed. We've never won an Olympic medal. Now here in London, we are quite optimistic. We will have medals, and those should be coming from track athletes. And mind you, in all the 9 Olympics that you've been to, including London, we've always had representation by track athletes. So it is a very important high-performance sport in our country, and it's making a lot of inroads, you know, into becoming the most popular sport in Botswana.
And what do you think makes a really good runner? I mean, you're talking this prospect you have just sounds like one of the fastest people out there. Do you think that there is a real psyche that the Botswanan squad has this time? Are they really geared up for London?
Yes, I think. I mean, in the past, we've never really had a lot of role models. So our youngsters didn't really have anybody to look up to. But now, since the advent of there's a man called Glody Dube who did quite well for the country. Unfortunately, he was never an Olympic or world champion, but he won a few of the meets. So, you know, they drew a lot of inspiration and motivation from him. But now came Amantle Monzo, who defied all the odds to ultimately become a world champion. So there is a lot of excitement from within our youth to look forward, and there's that belief within Botswana that they too can make it. Hence, we do believe they will be geared up. As the administrators, we have ensured that we have accorded them all the support that is necessary in terms of sports medicine, sports science, as well as training at some of the top high-performance centres in the world.
And if Mantle Monshi does actually win the 400 metres, wins not only Botswana's first Olympic medal, but a first Olympic gold medal, what would that actually mean for the country?
It will be a huge thing, believe you me. I'm sure our capital city, as well as a lot of other villages and towns in the country, are going to be at a standstill, you know, the moment that happens. And I'm sure when we get back, later this month, there will be like a rousing welcome for the team. I cannot wait for that to happen. I know as Chef de Mejean for the Botswana team to the Commonwealth Games in Delhi, she won her first gold medal there. And when we got back, we received a hero's welcome. You know, where there was a huge motorcade from the airport, people ululating, and you know, so I'm sure it's going to be a huge celebration never seen before. So it will like have a great impact on us as a small nation.
And tell us a bit about your operation here in London. Sort of, how many people have you brought over? How many athletes? How many sort of support team? Where are you staying? You know, all those sorts of things.
4 athletes we've brought. The 4th, I spoke about the 2. There's another 400 meter runner, also fairly good. He'll probably make the finals on a good day. Maybe, you never know, he could get a medal. But and then there's a boxer who unfortunately got eliminated. Now all the 4 athletes are staying at the athletes' village. Then they've got the track athletes. I've got a manager and a coach. The boxer had 2 people looking after him, 2 coaches, and a chef de mission. So the team itself had 5 people. We also have a team doctor who's not staying at the village, but we've rented an apartment outside for him, as well as a volunteer physiotherapist from the UK. That's about the team. And of course, there's people like us who are here, not necessarily as part of the, we are not part of the team, but to do a whole host of other things like attending meetings, and we'll be presenting a bid to the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa tomorrow to host the 2nd African Youth Games that are to be held in 2014. So there's a sizable number of other people that are here for different functions, including those that are exhibiting in our stand here at Africaland.
And tell us, are you enjoying London? Do you think the atmosphere is really great this time round for Olympics? Does it compare to any other Olympics you've attended yourself?
I am actually enjoying London. I was actually quite excited the first 2-3 days of my coming here. the weather was quite brilliant. It was quite warm, you know, no rains at all. Well, it's changed there. Yeah. But otherwise, I'm enjoying it. I mean, there are areas that one would hope could be improved, you know, but I do understand perhaps the reason behind the organizers being so thorough with respect to certain things, you know, like the security element sometimes can get a little bit into your nerve, but otherwise, the rest of it, I'm enjoying it, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. Tuelo Sarufu, thank you very much indeed. And just so that we know when we should be watching to see whether Amandelé Monchaux can win her gold medal, what day, what time?
She will be competing third, fourth, and fifth. So the final is the evening session on the 5th.
Okay.
So but same that is that date. And then the other guy is competing 4th, 5th, and 6th. The final is on the evening of the 6th. And the 800-meter runner is competing up to the 9th. That's the final in the evening. So the
okay, so the 5th, the 6th, and the 9th of August
yes.
in the evening, we
yes.
should all be cheering on Botswana.
Yes. Brilliant. Yeah, and our blue, black, and white, yeah.
We'll be doing that. Yeah, Tuelo Sarufu from okay. the Botswana Olympic Committee. Thank you very much for joining us here.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Midori House on Monocle 24.
Thailand's famous hospitality is ingrained in our culture. From the warmest of welcomes to our culinary skill. That's why hospitality businesses like the world's best cooking school, Le Cordon Bleu, come to Thailand to sample our unique mix of exquisite cuisine and transcendent service. And all this against a soundtrack of fantastic homemade music. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
What Cannes is to film and Venice to architecture, the city of Arles is to photography. Our Monocle film crew headed down to the south of France for the opening week of the Rencontre d'Arles, the world's leading photography festival.
Photographers love a group hug. There's a lot of talk of apertures and shutter speeds and white balance in bars and parties across town. Everyone's at it, shooting everything in sight. Everyone's got their eye on everything and how everyone else might be framing it for a shot. It's a life through a lens in Arles.
Monocle Films. Focus on photography on monocle.com.
You're listening to Monocle 24 live from Africa Village.
You are indeed listening to Midori House, broadcasting live from Africa Village with me, Sophie Grove, and Steve Bloomfield. We'll be speaking to Tolu Agulesi next, but first, this is Wiley Katsoe by Amadou and Mariam, the internationally renowned singing duo who met at Mali's Institute for the Young Blind in Bamako.
Wili ka tau ka zoi teri ke usigilen kikono
That was Wiley Katoso by Amadou and Mariam. You are listening to a very special edition of Midori House here at Africa Village. And in fact, we've even got a little bit of music here in the background now. The band has, as promised, struck up down below. Now, so far, Africa hasn't exactly set the world alight at these Olympic Games. A single silver for Egypt in the fencing is all they have to show. That will all change, though, once the focus shifts to the Olympic Stadium later this week and the track and field events get underway. The Kenyans and Ethiopians in particular will rack up gold after gold, I'm sure, at the middle and long distance races.
Now, to discuss what's coming up and who to look out for on the track, we're joined by Tolu Ogunlesi, an award-winning Lagos-based journalist and writer who was senior editor at Nigeria's greatest paper, Next, until it folded its print edition last year. I'm pleased to say Tolu joins us now here at the Olympic Village to speak to us about all things Africa. So tell us, this really is, next week is Africa's moment at the 2012 Olympics. What do you think we really is going to be the highlight of your week?
Well, one highlight, of course, has passed, which was the March past at the opening ceremony on last week. Somehow, I kind of joke that that's the first high point of the Olympics for. So while watching it, I was on Twitter, and of course there were, you know, loads of mostly young Nigerians all just waiting for that moment, you know, when the Nigerian contingent marches past. And for us, yeah, that was a high point. Maybe it's some sort of admission that we're not expecting, you know, very much, you know, when the Olympics actually, you know, kick off. It's, you know, that's something to hold on to, you know. And it was fun to see our contingent, you know, like, you know, some guys in sunglasses at midnight, you know, dancing past. Yeah, that was like, you know, that was good. We have a big team compared to, for example, the Ghanaians. So I think the Ghanaians had about, well, 9 people who marched past, which wasn't the whole team, of course, you know, but, you know, that can sometimes feel, you know, slightly underwhelming, you know. But on the whole, there's not so much, you know, to look forward to in that sense. This is our 15th Olympics. Nigeria has been going to the Olympics since 1952, so it's 60 years this year. 16 Olympics. We boycotted one, 76. But yeah, we have only a handful of medals to show for, 23 medals, I think.
Football, the men's football is the one where you should expect Nigeria to do well, and you won the gold in 1996, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And yet, this year you're not there.
Yeah. Male and female, yeah, we missed out on the soccer events. I think that this is one of the lowest points, actually, in our 60-year Olympic history. And it's sad that, yeah, soccer would have been something to look forward to. Now we'll probably look forward to basketball, we seem to be moving, you know, we're still in contention. And then, of course, next week, you know, when the track and field events start, you know, maybe we've had a couple of our medals, you know, come from the track and field events, and, you know, but there are no certainties or guarantees for.
And I wondered, we're here at Africa Village, and there are lots of nations gathered together. Is there if you are, for instance, Nigerian, and your team's not doing so well, is there another African country that you root for? Is there a sense of the continent, you know, really going at it together, and do you have that collective identity?
Well, yes, when it comes to sports, there is that collective identity. You know, it happens in the World Cup. You know, it happens a lot in the World Cup. Once all the African teams fall out and there's only one left, we all become, you know, Ghanaian or Cameroonian or Senegalese for that, you know, and it becomes a collective. Otherwise, you know, we are more likely to be found fighting and, you know, Nigeria, for example, has always had a sort of tempestuous relationship with Ghana, you know, politically and all that, you know. But when it comes to sports, you know, it turns out in some way to be some kind of unifying. So, you know, when the Kenyans and the Ethiopians hopefully start picking up the long distance medals next week. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we don't stand a chance anyway, so we might as well, yeah.
And is there any reason for do you think that particularly, you know, that the Ethiopians do triumph on these long distance events? I mean, do you have an opinion yourself, like in Africa, why is it that the Kenyans and the Ethiopians are so very good?
Well, I mean, I imagine that for one, when national teams succeed in the Olympics, you know, in sports in which you succeed, then inevitably governments then tend to focus on that, put more investment into it, and so the likelihood of continuing to succeed, the likelihood is higher. But I mean, I guess if we had to go to the beginning, why in the first place did Ethiopia and Kenya start? You know, I'm not sure you can take away the fact that perhaps there's something in these countries, you know, or in the citizens. I mean, there's physique, you know, there's the physical factors, you know, there's the fact that the body physiologies sometimes are built in a certain way because of the weather, of the climate, of I mean, one imagines that, you know, a mountainous area, for example, would over time tend to develop human beings who are suited for a certain kind of sport or the other, you know. But so that's going back to sort of the beginning, and then once success starts, governments then tend to focus on it, and you know, it's self-propagating.
And let's go back to Nigeria. I mean, you're obviously in London here at the moment, but yeah, you've been talking to friends and family back in Nigeria since the Olympics have started. Yeah. Is it as big an event there as it seems to be elsewhere in the world? Are people gathered around their TVs every night in the bars, you know, watching the swimming events, and next week they're going to be watching athletics? Is it a real sort of major event where everyone comes together?
Well, yes, it is. It would have been more so, you know, it would have been much more if we had, you know, qualified for the soccer competition. Soccer is a national, you know, it's a national obsession in Nigeria, more than any other sport.
Soccer, because and that 1996 win,
because
it was a famous victory. You beat you beat Brazil in the semi-finals, you beat Argentina in the final.
Yeah.
Tell us about how important that really was
for
Nigeria.
Well, that was huge. I was a teenager. I was 14 or so, you know. So it's, you know, but I remember sitting down, you know, to watch that. We were goals behind. I think on both occasions we came from behind.
You did,
to win. And now, this was at the height of a dictatorship. You know, this was where things were at their worst, sort of politically. So it was a major boost to national ego, in that sense. And there are people who tell you actually that the dictator in power then, Sani Abacha, lasted that long because Nigerians kind of, you know, declared a sort of ceasefire in their attempts to unseat him because of the success, the 96 success, you know. It was huge. It was to see our team sort of come from behind to beat Argentina. This is stuff that would typically never happen at the national team, at the senior level. So it was a major boost to national ego at a point when, you know, I mean, it was easy to give up as a people. Yeah. Very big. I can't forget it, actually, yeah. Even though I was young, you know, very young then.
No, and it made superstars out of everyone
and
in that team
superstars,
as well.
Yes, it did. Yeah. Kanu Nwankwo was, you know, it was sort of a major moment for him. And then he went on to, you know, to continue the national team for another decade, more than a decade, actually.
It was a great moment. And if you have time, YouTube it, Nigeria Olympics 1996. It's worth watching.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, even if you don't like football. Tolu Ogunlesi, thank you very much for joining us
here
on Midori House.
Yeah, my pleasure.
In the next half hour, so much stuff to tell you about, so much stuff, some Algerian music, as promised, a Tunisian potter. But first, we're heading back to Midori House for Jonathan Wheatley with the news headlines.
Thanks very much. The United Nations Supervision Mission in Syria has said that opposition forces in Aleppo are now in possession of heavy weapons. Rebels battling for control of Syria's commercial capital have said today that they are closing in on Aleppo city centre. A Florida judge has today rejected a motion asking him to step down from the murder trial of George Zimmerman, the neighbourhood watch captain who killed unarmed black teenager Trayvon Martin, ruling the defence request was legally insufficient. Over half of India's 1.2 billion population is finding life returning to normal after one of the world's worst blackouts when grids collapsed for the second time in just 2 days. The Belarusian president Alexander Lukashenko has sacked his air defence chief and the head of the border guards for failing to stop a Swedish plane drop hundreds of teddy bears over the hardline state in a pro-democracy stunt. Sports news now, and 8 women badminton players have been disqualified from the women's doubles at the London Olympics for not trying their hardest to win. The women from China, Indonesia and South Korea have been charged with deliberately losing points to secure an easier draw through the Olympic tournament. Meanwhile, China are leading the medals table with 15 gold medals. The United States are in second place with 10 gold medals. France is in third place with 5 gold medals. And Britain are in 10th place with 2 golds, 2 silver and 2 bronze medals. And those are the stories for the moment here on Monaco 24.
And you're listening to Midori House, live from Africa Village. Now, coming up next, we're going to be speaking to Jean-Claude Albert. But before that, we're going to hear some Nigerian music. This is the Lidaju Sisters, who improbably forged their own genre of Memphis soul funk in 1970s Lagos.
Was Lijadu Sisters with Danger, the title track of their third album, which was released in 1976. It is 1834 here at Africa Village, and I'm pleased to announce the sun has come out, hasn't it, Sophie?
It's glorious. We're it back really in sunny Africa, really.
I actually need some sunglasses on. Anyway, there we are. And we've been joined by Jean-Claude Ablet, who is here with two hats on. He's editor-in-chief of Le Pont, a new magazine aimed at Francophone Africa and the diaspora here in Europe. And he's also the man in charge of press here at Africa Village. Jean-Claude, welcome to Midori House.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for having us here at Africa Village.
Yeah.
So now let's start by talking about the Olympics before we get on to what you've got set up here. Give us a bit of an idea of the athletes that we should be looking out for from the Francophone parts of Africa. Who are the big shots that we should be pinning our money on?
Well, all eyes are turned to the Ivorian young ladies runner for 100 metres and 200 metres. Her name is Muriel Aure. She's been on the spotlight for the past month, winning the first podium from Paris to Rome, and quite recently she's the one who's been spotted to have the first gold medal as far as sprint race is concerned. And besides, we got another guy from Togo for the canoe.
So
in the canoe, yeah. What's his name? Big Boti. I've seen a picture today. It's a picture today, and I think that it's one of Africa's hope.
Okay.
I mean, do you think that there's a lot of pressure on these two? I mean, especially Muriel Alure. Like, she's quite a young woman. Do you think that, you know, all the eyes of her Francophone compatriots are on her? Do you think she's feeling that pressure?
This is what she said the last time I met her. That was 2 weeks ago. She said, "Jean-Claude, listen, I am going to London. Hope to get a medal, but the pressure is too high, and that could also work against myself, but we all hope that she will make it."
And do you think that her audience at home are really supporting her? What is it like in terms of their attitude to failure or to success? Are athletes supported in the Ivory Coast if they fail?
I mean, let's remind that the most important in Olympic Games is to take part, not to win necessarily. So if she doesn't make it this year, we'll be hope that in the next Olympics in Brazil, she'll make it. Or one day, we never know.
She's not as big as Didier Drogba just yet.
I should note that Drogba is in the spotlight for the past 10 years, whereas Aure is just a rising star, only known since the beginning of this year. But still, she's a big star already.
A future Drogba.
Yeah,
now tell us about Africa Village, which I have a wonderful view of. You don't because your back's to it, but you know it all perfectly off the back of your hand. I mean, this is the first time that so many of the African Olympic committees have come together, isn't it, to have something like this? Why was it decided to do this time?
Right. Africa is the continent with 53 countries, and so far each country stands alone when there are big events like this one. And the chair of the African National Committee Association decided in 1998 during the Beijing Games that Africa should unite on one platform to showcase Africa's diversity. This is where all the concept came from. And as you can see, it's one continent with diversity in arts, culture, and so. It's like united, Africa is stronger. This is the whole idea about Africa Village.
And it's rather apt that it happens in London because it was rather a base for Pan-Africanism in the past. But I wondered, is there any country that isn't here that didn't sign up for Africa Village? That, you know, where are they and why?
For some political reason, I mean, some countries are not here. I mean, South Africa is not here and Kenya is not here. But they just think it's a choice. They think that they can stand alone. So this is the choice. But as you can see, all participating countries, most of them are here. It's about 25 or 23 countries here. So South Africa's village somewhere in around London. The Kenya as well, somewhere in London. Uganda, who is the creed of good athletes, are somewhere in London. But still, the spirit of Africa remains here in Kensington Gardens.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And just quickly before we let you go, tell us a little bit about Le Pont, because it's a new magazine. It's aimed at Francophones, African Francophones living in Europe, but also back in Africa, isn't it?
Yeah. Le Pont, it's a French title, which it means the bridge. And the magazine aimed at bridging French-speaking African communities, the diaspora, and also to bridge diaspora with the African continent so that anybody who would like to get a message across the continent, in the diaspora, can go through Le Pont magazine. And also Le Pont is aimed at giving the French-speaking African people a voice, because living in the UK, which is the Anglophone country, we tend to not hearing the Francophone, so the voice, the Pont is coming to give them visibility and a voice.
Well, Jean-Claude Ablé, editor-in-chief of Le Pont and main press man here at Africa Village, thank you very much indeed for joining us here on Midori House.
Thank you very much.
And thank you indeed for letting us be here. You're listening to Midori House, as promised. Potters, right next.
Modern Thailand is on the move. Take transport. We're building urban mass transit systems and a $15.4 billion high-speed rail link that will crisscross the country faster than ever before. We've even developed a solar-powered prototype of our famous tuk-tuks for a greener urban journey. And if you think that sounds good, wait until you hear our homegrown teapot. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
On the latest episode of Section D, we visit Buenos Aires to hear what life is like today for the architecture and design community there. We also head to Melbourne, where a three-day event last week explored the importance of sound in architecture.
And it's given us rise to think about, okay, so let's think more about sound. What are its qualities? What are its values? What can we learn about it? If we value our oral experience just as much as our visual one, then there's a whole other world of richness out there that we can tap into.
Elsewhere, we talk to a man in Macedonia about his matchbox collection. We speak to the Australian firm that built the cauldron for the London Olympics. And we find out, thanks to a new exhibition at the New York MoMA, how design for children has evolved over the last century.
That's Section D with Hugo MacDonald, premiering every Tuesday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
You're listening to Monocle 24 live from Africa Village.
and welcome back to Midori House. We're live from Africa Village. Now, Africa Village is filled with wonderful craft. It's actually, every stall has its own highlight, and I've picked out what I think is possibly the best one in the form of Mohamed Hashisha from Tunisia. He's an absolute dream on the potter's wheel, but he's also the director of the International Ceramic Centre in Tunis, and he's been dragged away from the wheel to join us now on Midori House. Mohamed, welcome to Midori House.
Thanks.
So tell us about your craft. You're a ceramicist, and where are you based?
We are here in Africa Village to show and to promote our culture, our ceramic in Tunisia, because the history of ceramic in Tunisia is very known, and there is many places that are known with ceramic, like Nabil, Djerba, Qalalin, and we are here to work with children who are here to visit our stones. And it's this Africa Village. It's really is, I don't know how. It's very important to be together from different country from Africa to know our different culture.
And you are making some small pots and beautiful tiles down as a display. Is this something you do on a larger scale back in Tunisia? And when did you learn to be a ceramicist? From what age did you start doing this?
I've studied this in the university, and after I do many stage in different place with artisanal and in French also. To work to be like that, we should work every day with stones and continue to work.
Now, Tunisia is not the only country, as Sophie says, who is using this opportunity to help tell a story about their country. We're also joined up here on the balcony here at Africa Village by Ayele Gelane, who's the Director of Tourism for Ethiopia. Ayele, welcome to Midori House. What is it that's so important about an event like the Olympics for Ethiopia in helping to tell a story about your country?
Well, as far as Olympic is concerned, we started taking part in Sydney, Melbourne in 1948. Unfortunately, we were not able to collect medals at that time. But as of 1960, the Rome Olympic, we started snatching gold medals in marathon. That is the first gold medal that we have snatched by a well-known athlete, Abu Bikila, for Ethiopia and in Africa as a whole. Then out of 10, scoring and collecting gold medals has become very common for Ethiopians. For example, in Beijing last time, we have collected 4 gold medals in 10,000 meters and 5,000 meters, men and female, and also other bronze and silver gold medals.
And what does that do in terms of creating an image about your country?
Well, you know, these world-class athletes are our ambassadors in promoting Ethiopia's image in different parts of the world, because they are taking part in international events throughout the world. It's be it in Europe, be it in Asia, be it in America. So they are always doing a good job as far as creating and improving the image of the country that in the outer world.
And I've got a question. We've interviewed, actually, one of your main stars, Kinesia Bekele, in Monocle magazine a couple of issues ago. And I asked him this. He's from Bokoji, this incredible town outside Addis Ababa, where there are about 4 or 5 gold Olympic athletes that actually came from there. What is it about that place? Is there something in the water? Why is everyone so fast in Bokoji?
Well, there's nothing special about it. But what is very important is that a number of world-class athletes that Ethiopia has produced have come from this particular place, which is about 200 kilometers from Addis Ababa. And for example, Haile Gebrselassie, Drunesh Dibaba, Derartu Tulu, and the family of the Dibabas all came from Bakoji. So Bakoji has become one of the major sources in producing world-class athletes. Actually, currently, there are about three or four of them who have come here to take part in the London Olympics. Especially, we are expecting gold from these athletes, like Drunesh Dibaba, who has snagged the gold medals in 5,000 and 1,000 meters from Beijing.
Well, Ayele and Mohammed, thank you both very much for joining us here on Midori House. And just to give a bit more of a flavour of all the things there are at Africa Village, we're going to play you a little song now. This is by an Algerian band who are right here at Midori House, at Africa Village, called Inchira. That was Inchira performing here a little earlier. Now, when it comes to winning Olympic gold, Africa's track record is as good as any continent. But unlike wealthier regions, Africa has not benefited from the same expensive training programs and coaching expertise. For countries like Ethiopia and Algeria, addressing key issues like sanitation and nutrition has often meant resources are far too scarce to fund Olympic success.
Now, thankfully, the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa offers support to training programs of countries that show athletic promise but lack the economy to properly prepare for the Games.
A little earlier, Monocle's Adrian Craddock caught up with Mustafa Beraf, first vice president of the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa, to hear how sport can help bring about unity on the African continent.
The ACNOA is the association of all 53 African NOCs. It has as its major role the coordination of all 53 NOCs for the Olympic movement across the continent of Africa, to make sure that the Olympic values are marketed, protected and promoted. And finally, to make sure that the Olympic Charter is strictly adhered to, that the values and the morals of the Olympic values are adhered to utterly, completely, and to make sure that there is complete solidarity across all African nations in terms of sport.
So how many NOCs do you work with?
There are 53, so ACNOA is the representative continental body for all 53 African NOCs. There are only, so there are 53 countries, and every single country has an NOC. ACNOA is very proud to be able to say that the South Sudan is going to be on its own, and so they're in the middle of preparing themselves. So by the time we get to the next set of games, the South Sudan will be the 54th NOC member state.
So what are the challenges of working with so many different NOCs?
As you can probably imagine, Africa as a continent has many other priorities before sport, and they range from health, economy, development, infrastructure. Those are really clearly key across the continent in Africa. In essence, what ACNOA's main objective is to try and teach, convince and promote the fact that sport, used properly and wisely, can help in terms of education, can help in terms of development, can make sure that people remain very healthy, and so that out of it comes a much better and a more rounded education, and that sport, in terms of its values and in terms of its health and what it does to the body, can make sure that it promotes all of those values. One of the mechanisms that they use is very much a political dimension, to go and talk to all the politicians and to make sure that the politicians understand the values that sport have got. And what they're really aiming for is to try and get to the youth, because what their hope is that if the youth understands the values the sports bring, particularly in health and in development, well-being and education, then that in turn will turn them into champions, and that in turn will then clearly start to create a bit of a role-building effect. But equally, they have to temper this, because they want to make absolutely certain that it is well understood that none of these countries should use sport as a political tool.
You mentioned there's a real message of promoting a healthy lifestyle and promoting, you know, leadership and so forth. Because you're working with so many different individual countries, is there also an element of creating a more unified Africa?
The
answer, of course, is yes. It's one of the primary objectives. To that end, ACNOA organizes a series of AGMs every single year, where all 53 NOCs, presidents and secretary generals, come together to discuss ideas, objectives, ways forward. It is actually sport at the moment is probably the one unifying aspect of the continent that it has, so they work very, very hard to make sure that they continue to promote that. The second objective, which we haven't talked about yet, is that ACNOA's role is crucial in developing the role of women in African sport, which is still a major issue. There are still certain countries in Africa where the women are, in any part of their lives, they're very much kept, you know, under the radar. And so what ACNOA try and do as a result of, you know, through sport, is just to bring them to the fore and to give them equal rights to men.
So just finally, what are your hopes for Africa in these Olympics? What are your realistic hopes as far as medal counts goes and so forth?
Zubahav does not believe that we're going to have that we're going to win that many medals, because he feels that many of the developed worlds are exceptionally well prepared, better so than perhaps he has ever seen before. We've introduced many young athletes for the first time across all our sports. So very much we are looking forward to future games, where we hope that some of the young people that are here for the first time in London will win some good medals for us going forward. In the first instance, it was incredibly important for a lot of our sporting people who are here, boys and girls, to be able to participate in sports in arenas that they have here, swimming centres that they have here in such a beautiful city as London, and to take advantage of the most incredible organisation which has been undertaken by LOCOG and the organising committee, and of course the incredible welcome that Africa and all its sporting people have received from the people of London, the city of London, Westminster, and everybody that's been involved.
And just my final question, we're here at Africa Village, and many of the countries that you've talked about are being represented here. What does this village do to promote your mission?
The
village has been created for the very first time in any games ever, so it's a major first. And it's a complete privilege to have been able to create our very first village in what is one of the most spectacular cities and such an important city on the world platform. We've received an enormous number of visitors already. When we were averaging 3,000 or 4,000 people a day, we have had some very great visits here from key people from the IOC. So there's a lot of noise about Africa Village, for which we are very grateful.
And it is very much our first effort, our very first house, and we are already very excited about our Africa Village in Rio in 2016.
Nous pensons particulièrement au prochain jeu de Rio.
Mustafa. And that was Mustafa Beraf, first vice president of the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa, and translated by Dominique Gill.
And I'm afraid to say that's all we've got time for here today. Our producers were Dawn Trump and Paul Noble, with the help of Alex Funnell, Casey Bilbao and Adrian Craddock. Thank you to everyone here at Africa Village for being such amazing hosts. We'll be continuing our Olympic tour tomorrow when we head to Career House. Robert Bound and Hugh McDonald will be your hosts. The news is next, then the entrepreneurs. But from all of us here at Africa Village, I'm Steve Bloomfield.
I'm Sophie Grove.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.